Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Your source for Big Ten talk, it's Off Tackle Empire.
Welcome to week four on Off Tackle Empire, where a vast majority of our teams are going to start conference play, and some of us have some Thursday night tuning up to do. I'm Steve Braun, a.k.a. Thumbosaurus. I'm Illinois representative alongside my intrepid co-host, Andrew Kosheski. We still didn't bother to bring anybody on for this week, but as we get into conference play, it's going to be time for us to have some diverse and opposing viewpoints on this show.
But before we do that, Thursday, Chattanooga at Illinois. Remind me, why are we doing this? Any part of it?
I have no idea.
The opponent. Let's
break this down.
The day. One, the particular opponent.
We've scheduled an FCS team. This was made in the last couple of years. Absolutely was. Illinois has a perfect record against FCS teams, despite being one of the worst teams in Power 5 football for the last 30 years. Never lost to an FCS team. I've always said, yes, we're frequently the worst team in the Big Ten, but damn it, we occupy our spot at the bottom with dignity. Damn it. We're not out here losing to FCS teams. I don't think we're the worst in the Big Ten right now because, hi, Nebraska. Oh, boy.
Yeah, Nebraska and Northwestern, like, they're candidates. I don't think Illinois is... I don't think you're on the medal stand for worst in the team.
Nevertheless, Chattanooga is... Well, last week they were number 10 in FCS. Now, the Thursday thing, no idea. I have absolutely no possible idea why Illinois, which, again, draws a lot of alumni from Chicago, Indianapolis, and St. Louis, a lot of students from those areas. Point is, a lot of fans live in those areas, doing a Thursday night game as one of their home games. That absolutely mystifies me. As for the actual game, there's no line for this one yet. Bill Connolly says that we should win by around 12.5 points, which is around what he was saying for Northwestern and Southern Illinois.
Well, that's not foreboding.
Yep. So if I look at Chattanooga in the Sagarin ratings is 115, which puts them a few steps below Incarnate Word. Quite a few above Southern Illinois, but also above the likes of Nevada, Ohio, Ball State, quite a few FCS teams, but let's see, where do they get? Let's see, yeah, that puts them about 13 spots below below Northwestern, sorry. That's about, yeah, it's close enough to Rutgers. They would be the, lowest rated opponent, I believe, that we've played. Let's find regular Virginia. Okay. In any case, the thing that makes me nervous is that we've turned the ball over four times in each of our last two games. So we should probably not do that. Really, the thing I'm most concerned about is the play of the interior offensive line. Chase Brown has been asked to do an awful lot of work himself. He had, against Indiana, 157 yards after contact. I mean, that's most of his yards. They're going to have to make it a little easier because one of the best ways to ensure that you don't fumble is ensuring that you don't get hits in the backfield when you're just getting the ball.
Yeah.
That's definitely a way to cause fumbles, is to get the exchange blown up. The other thing Illinois really needs to get cleaned up, again, the fumbles, the officiating and shit, it's just, like, the fumbles we have minimal control over, really, as far as coaching and working these kinks out. Illinois has been downright adorable with red zone play calling. Now, of course, some of this has to do with the fact that the interior offensive line is not mauling people like they did last year, so dude feels he needs to be cute with the offensive play calling. Of course, this is also maybe a play caller, trying to announce his arrival to the world with a really nifty play. Right in the red zone when it's most important. Could we use a big red zone target? Absolutely. Thank God we matched the offers for our running backs, though. So anyway, we're a 77% win probability. Again, I really like Bill Connolly's model. It does not see Northwestern Duke, but it sees many other things. So, I'm not going to lie, I'm nervous. I'm nervous only because it's a game we will get absolutely no credit for winning. It will be apocalyptic if we lose, considering that we already picked up a loss in a game that we played better than our opponent in.
Well, yes, but also, if the Indiana game should have and kind of needed to be a win, the Virginia game on paper going into the season was a loss. So I actually think you're basically level so far.
Yeah, that's actually level with what I said about my 4-8 prediction. It involved a loss to Virginia and a win over Indiana. It also involved beating Chattanooga.
Yeah, and it's not that you can't lose this game. Chattanooga is 3-0. It's been over an all-FCS schedule so far. Preston Hutchinson is a capable dual-threat quarterback, so he is going to be an extra dimension to account for. But this is still an FCS team. They are not a Dakota or, you know, a Richmond or what have you. They're merely a pretty good FCS team.
They are also extremely pass-heavy. They are somewhat one-dimensional in that regard. They haven't been able to run the ball against their FCS schedule, or against their FCS schedule particularly well. Against Wofford, they did it just enough to keep running the ball down, but when it comes to winning time, moving the ball, they go to the air. I think Illinois should be able to lean on the pass rush to take that out. Nevertheless, I am devoting enough time to let you know that, putting it on the record, I am concerned. I have concerns about Illinois' ability to beat Chattanooga. Of course, after that, they look good in that. Then they have three of the exact same game against Wisconsin, against Iowa, and against Minnesota. So, could be a good opportunity for a tune-up, and then a long rest before going on the road to play Wisconsin, and then again at home for Wisconsin, and then also Wisconsin.
And stylistically much more to Illinois' liking, those three games that were to follow. Moving on to the Saturday slate, chosen for Big Nude Saturday, Maryland at Michigan.
It is pumpkin time for the chariot that is Maryland.
Yeah, earlier than it usually happens. Usually they get to 4-0 before this will happen.
Not always. That Penn State one where they were briefly ranked after taking down Syracuse. That's true. I mean, you know what the drill is. We've been here before. You know what's going to happen.
It's still September, so perhaps Maryland finds a way to be feisty despite the +17 line for the home team, but more likely Michigan just hustles them along to the usual second phase of their season where they, with increasing desperation, look at their schedule like, where's the sixth win going to come from? Maybe they find it, maybe they don't. But either way, within 2 or 3 weeks of now, the rest of the conference will have tuned them out. I guess it's fair to say Michigan's reloaded defense really has not been tested yet at all. They do still have the talent to give Maryland's offensive line trouble both on the ground and in pass pro. Michigan's secondary could be vulnerable. It's really hard to say because, again, they haven't faced a quarterback or a receiver worth a damn yet.
What are the weapons for Maryland, though? We know Rakeem Jarrett is a big target. Jashawn Jones has been kind of limited. Dante Demas has been invisible.
It certainly seems that he's not back to his old self yet. Jacob Copeland is the other guy with
He's picked
Jarrett.
Up a lot of the slack.
Yeah. I would guess as the season goes on, you probably see Demas round more into his form from last year. They've also found a freshman running back in Roman Hemby who looks every bit as explosive as the McFarlands, the Fleet Davis, the sorts they've had in the back, capable of taking a run to the house if there's even a little bit of blocking or misalignment. So they have the weapons. They have the experienced quarterback. Their offensive line's still not very good. Their defense is very suspect. I don't think Michigan's going to have any trouble moving the ball and scoring. The question is Maryland going to be able to keep up and make it a game? I tend to think probably not.
But just this is because we've been here before.
We have. We've seen this movie before. But it is true that this is probably the best overall club. Like, look, in the past, Maryland has looked good on offense. It's usually much more about one star receiver and then a decent quarterback. I think Tagovailoa is better than the quarterbacks they've had in the last couple of coaching cycles. I think this group of receivers is deeper. Maybe the running game isn't quite as deep and versatile because it's pretty much Hemby and nobody else.
But we're only talking about the offense because at some point the defense is going to need to get a stop.
Yeah.
That's really where this game is going to fall apart.
Yeah.
Even if, honestly, could see Maryland come out and score on their first drive or two, you know, with scripted plays and stuff, but then probably just get hot knife through buttered on defense, and then when Maryland stops scoring, Michigan's not gonna.
Yeah, and then the game pressure turns up. I bet what you see is maybe you get late stages of the first quarter, maybe into the second, and it's like 14-17 or tied at 21 or something like that. And then Michigan scores a touchdown, and then Maryland has run out of scripted plays, and they commit a turnover, and Michigan scores again. And, you know, then the wheels kind of come off, and then Maryland goes three and out again. It's like, all right, now Michigan has a two-score lead and the ball, and they've scored twice in the last 90 seconds of game time or something like that. So that feels like the kind of script that we see here. I'd like to see something different. I like to see interesting things, and Maryland getting into a four-quarter game with Michigan would be a thing we haven't seen in a long time. Consider the over in this game, though. I don't know about the spread because 17 is a lot, and Maryland can put some points up and maybe beat that number on a back door or something. But 62.5 with two offenses capable of really moving the ball, one defense that we think is pretty bad and another that we don't really know about, I think the over would be something you could consider there.
Well, because Harbaugh does probably want to get back to the mentality that you have when you are looking beyond the Big Ten season, which is Maryland is not an opponent to defeat. Maryland is an opportunity to, like, check out what you got on offense and just kind of, like, we're going to try out some new things we've been working on at this concert tonight and just kind of vibe, kind of jam.
I would think that would be a little truer if they hadn't just played three games in a row where they did that. Their backup, Cade McNamara, is already injured. Unless and until they pull J.J. McCarthy, I kind of think they're going to be going full bore, all engines ahead, trying to score and get their starters.
Play all the hits.
Yeah, get their starters as many reps against something that's closer, at least, to the competition they need to beat to get to their goals. So, anyway, I think the over is the good play there. I don't know about the spread so much. I'm fairly confident Michigan wins this game. I would like to see an interesting game, at least, but who knows. Other game in the noon slot, if you're not tickled by the big nude, would be Central Michigan at Penn State. Probably a well-advised cool-down stretch for the Nittany Lions after that stress test at Auburn. Not that it was stressful, but certainly difficult.
This will be a weird game where the most successful running back on the field is not going to be a factor, because I do not think that the Lou Canoe is going to have anything for this Penn State defensive front.
No. And it's Central Michigan has a collection of skill players. They do. But their offensive line is not going to be able to stand up to Penn State's defensive front in particular. They did
some weird things against Oklahoma State late. They can also throw the ball reasonably well.
Yeah,
in addition
to,
of course, the Lou Canoe.
Yeah.
Lou Nichols, we were talking about.
Yeah, Richardson's a decent quarterback. McGoey, I think is how you say his name, the receiver they have remaining. As well as the other guy, Dallas Dixon. So they have a couple of weapons on the perimeter. It's not like it's just 30 carries a game for Lou Nichols and nothing else. But still, it's a 26-point line for a reason. On the one hand, I don't know if I would be comfortable laying that many points with an offense that, you know, can still have its misfiring tendencies with Penn State. It only takes kind of one tweak to Sean Clifford for you to be dealing with Drew Aller in a larger sample size again. But they've played Aller in all their games so far, I believe. Plainly, they don't intend to preserve his red shirt. So maybe you end up seeing a little bit more deliberate action and more competitive game scripts for the backups, and it ends up staying kind of close.
It remains close near halftime, and then they go, ah, shit. We better play our generational talent at running back, give some carries to Nick Singleton, and he takes them for touchdowns.
Maybe so. I think the more likely case would be they build a big lead, and then do they end up maintaining the margin? Who can say? I can't see the over hitting either at 60 and a half when Penn State's going to need to do most of that scoring themselves. Something like a 49-14 score would get you there, I suppose.
Because Lou Nichols does not have breakaway speed relative to Penn State athletes.
No, he's not going to have any 60-plus yard touchdowns, most likely. So, yeah, I don't expect there to be a whole lot of drama in this game.
Just, you know, as a Mac enthusiast, I am excited for us to finally get beyond September, patch up the many holes in the wounded Lou canoe, and go to war, baby. I mean, God, this is the problem with these Mac, with all these Mac games, is that, especially with the offensive line play struggling like it has,
yeah.
If you're a Mac team, do you even play your starters in games like this anymore? Because a lot, I mean, Brett Gabbert is down for a long time after they played Kentucky.
Thoroughly derailed Miami's season. Yeah,
yeah, that's a big problem. I mean, they went up on Cincinnati 7-0 and then were outscored like 38-10 the rest of the way.
Something like that. Okay, moving on to the afternoon shift. Speaking of Cincinnati, Indiana returns the home and home, this time going to Nippert Stadium. Bearcats favored by 17. I get that Indiana's a very, very tenuous 3-0 here, but that line does feel a little disrespectful for a Cincinnati team that hasn't really found their footing and fully reloaded yet. They didn't exactly blow away Miami Peroxide, and although I think this game is probably still a loss for the Hoosiers, I could see them keeping it within that margin. Indiana is at 3-0 ahead of schedule on their road back to a bowl game. This is probably a loss. I think if there's a game script that is favorable for Indiana, it would actually be letting Connor Bazelak cut it loose, turning away from the run game, frankly. I do not expect Indiana's offensive line to make much in the way of running lanes.
Their offensive line has just not performed very well this year. I do think, I mean, well, it's, look at how they won the last two games that they shouldn't have won. It was Connor Bazelak just kind of getting away with stuff.
Winging it to a couple of really good receivers. So I don't expect the Hoosiers to pull off the win, but perhaps they keep it close. I would think they do. I think they beat this number last year, and that was even after McFadden got ejected. I think Penix had already been hurt by the time they got to this game. So anyway, other afternoon.
So are you telling me, though, that Indiana would be best served by using a really, really cheap first-person shooter strategy, just being camper the whole time?
Just camp. Just
fucking camper, man.
Just fucking camping.
Noob.
Other afternoon game, I'm actually going to be at this one.
Using cover.
Minnesota at Michigan State, where the Spartans are +3 at home. I don't really know what to make of this. On the one hand, after their performance last week, I'm not confident that Michigan State could even stop the Big Ten West passing offenses, if you know what I mean by that. If Minnesota wants to explore what the ceiling of their passing game is without Chris Ottman-Bell, this would be the game to do it. Michigan State's pass rush was thoroughly stymied by Washington's offensive line. I think Minnesota's is comparable. I don't really know about their pass blocking as much because they never have to do it. We will see if Jacob Slade is able to play in this game. He was a surprise scratch against Washington last week, an excellent defensive tackle for MSU. If he is able to play, I would feel pretty good about Michigan State's ability to control the Minnesota run game. And if that's the case, then maybe we're in good shape here. But I am not confident that Michigan State's going to be able to do much on offense. Minnesota's defense is a cut above anything that we've seen so far. Washington might have a more athletic front than they do, but Minnesota's secondary is considerably better.
Well, as you know, the top three receivers for Minnesota all have hyphenated last names. And Chris Ottman-Bell, Revan Spanford, Michael Brown Stevens.
Yeah.
Take one of those guys off, and now you're dealing with Clay Geary, Dylan Wright, Lamichael Brockington. Those are not guys with hyphenated last names. Brockington has enough syllables for a hyphenated last name, but does not have a hyphen in it.
I'm just going to put a hyphen in it, Brocking hyphen ton, and we'll get to where we need to be. It'll be interesting. So a couple of important players that are up in the air for Michigan State. I expect Jaden Reed will play as well. He was out against Washington after gashing his back, sliding into a bench after a catch against Akron. Kind of a freak injury, but not something that should keep him out. I would hope that he and Slade are both able to go and that makes a meaningful difference. Those are couple of their better players at a couple of important positions. But look, Minnesota's had plenty of time to tune themselves up. They should certainly have the basics of their game plan down pat. It's been a lot more bumpy of a ride for Michigan State. I think Minnesota probably wins the game. I hope to be wrong. And I don't think it's going to be a runaway either way. The only thing that gives me any pause is if Minnesota does get momentum going on the ground, Michigan State's offense is capable of turning in multiple three and outs. Long periods of inactivity still feel like they're on the table. So if it has the vibe that the first quarter of the Washington game did last week at any point, this could be a problem.
Yeah, it's the object that has a hard time moving versus not much of a force as far as passing game is concerned. It's a weird stylistic matchup. A team that can be exploited by the pass is a team that does not like to pass.
Yeah, and so again, it's going to be an interesting choice for PJ Fleck and his offensive staff here. They know the easier way to move the ball here, but they also know what they prefer to do. So I'm going to be interested to see. Even last season, there were definitely games, Michigan turned to a much more pass-oriented game script against Michigan State than they had previously. MSU ended up winning the game, but not because Cade McNamara had a bad game. Hunter Johnson had probably the best passing game Northwestern had seen recently on larger volume of attempts. It's really, most opposing coaches end up being like, I can't pass up and give my quarterback a chance to work against this group.
Weird ass results that Michigan State has had against the Big Ten West in the last 5 or so years. It is a random number generator.
There is
absolutely no way to predict what is going to happen here. So let's go to the night slate. Florida Atlantic at Purdue.
Why at night? Why is this game at night? It's 19.5-point margin for Purdue at home over a crappy opponent. I don't know why we put these games at night. This should be a noon game. What are we doing here? I would say the same thing about Miami, Ohio at Northwestern, but they're only a 6.5-point favorite against a MAC team playing a backup quarterback. So that's about all there needs to be said about that game, I think.
And that, according to a couple of statistical models, is a pretty generous line for Northwestern. Sagarin has Miami of Ohio one spot better than Northwestern.
I have to assume that some of those stats are still baking in Miami's efficiency when Gabbert was still healthy. They really don't feel like the same kind of threat without him, but I guess we'll see. This Northwestern defense has made a couple of who is this quarterback look pretty good this year. What I guess is going to be presented as the big game in the conference this week, Wisconsin at Ohio State. I mean, sure, put this on ABC if you want. It's an 18-point line, and Wisconsin probably does not have the offensive firepower to keep it close. Ohio State's defense feels like they're going to be much better prepared for a guy like Braylon Allen than they might have been the last couple years. Maybe Wisconsin's defensive front can make enough mud up front that, Ohio State's been on and off with the run game. When they've actually turned to it in good volume and balance, it's worked. But they've also had a couple of underwhelming lines for Travion Henderson, so maybe they end up cueing themselves into a game here. But I
Well, let's be clear about what we're talking about. Ohio State has, for the last 10 years, won this game every single time.
Yeah.
If Ohio State... I mean, if this is even a single-digit game, really, with the kind of team that Wisconsin is, especially if Ohio State loses this game, it's the beginning of the end of the Ryan Day era, and I say that with no hyperbole. Yeah. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think there's any way.
Yeah, this style
of team should not be within two scores of this particular Ohio State team.
No.
That's really all there is to it.
Who cares, though? That's the real question, is who cares? Because if you're in the audience of this podcast, you shouldn't be watching this game anyway. Because in the same time frame, I think half an hour difference in the kick time, you can instead tune to the Off-Tackle Empire and I'm sure the Sickos Committee Game of the Week. Iowa at Rutgers.
So you have a team that has no idea what quarterback it's going to play on any given down versus a team
that knows exactly who they're going to play, even though he's the worst goddamn quarterback I've seen, bar none, in this conference. And that includes the Art Sitkowski era at Rutgers. At least he tried to do something.
So that is quite the matchup. These are teams that value more than winning, they value setting up the punt. More than winning, they value time of possession.
All-time punter collision, by the way, in the senior editions of Torrey Taylor and Adam Corsack.
This legitimately, there will be no better punter matchup the whole time, and they will be given plenty of opportunities. Do you think we see more than 16 punts?
It's a lot of possessions. That implies basically that there's going to be several possessions. To get to that many punts, if you run the ball, three downs, full play clock, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough, but I think we can get there. I think we can get 16 punts. I mean, that's eight apiece. If you figure in a typical game, what's a team get? Usually 9, 10, 11 possessions, something like that. I think we can do it. I think we can do 16 punts.
Rutgers is not Nevada. Rutgers has proven that they have a capable defense.
Yeah.
And that a capable defense might not be their ceiling, but that is all it takes.
And so the other item of note here is there any chance that betting the over is a sensible move? 35.5
points. We're talking a 20-17 Rutgers win.
Would hit the over.
The Illinois Penn State 20-18 9 overtime game, which famously didn't even come close to hitting the over, would hit the over here.
Oh, circle this one with your sicko Sharpie, folks. This is going to be potentially an all-timer.
Frankly, you know what? I'm glad that this involves Rutgers and just not watch, a Big Ten West team.
Just watch. It's gonna be like 38-35.
I'm glad that it involves Rutgers and not a Big Ten West team, because the end of this game would immediately invoke the end of divisions in the middle of the year.
The Big Ten athletic directors have convened and decided enough is enough. We are not going to send one of these we are not risking sending one of these teams to the conference title game. We are doing away with these divisions and doing either a rematch of the game or just Penn State goes and plays Ohio State. We are not risking this. We can't. The stakes are too high.
And Rutgers, of course, takes the whatever trophy Illinois Rutgers plays for, and hopefully it will, in fact, give them the wherewithal they need to grind this game out, because I do not remember any fan base complaining louder about Rutgers being added to the Big Ten than Iowa. And I can think of nothing funnier than a 5-3 Rutgers win here. I did see something recently that some survey that showed the most sexually active college campuses, and of the Big Ten, two teams in the top five. Rutgers at number two, Illinois at number five. Put in the nut in Illinois, baby.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. Enough talking about that absolutely disgusting game. What else we got nationwide? Kent State continues their death march as they go to Georgia after playing Washington and Oklahoma already. Clemson hosts Wake Forest, perhaps the matchup of the week. Oh, no, it's not, because the Iron Skillet game happens between TCU and SMU in the first year after Sonny Dykes switched teams, went from SMU over to TCU. That game's currently set as a pick'em. Should be an absolutely massively entertaining game. Let's see, how can I turn? Are you kidding me? It's on ESPNU. You can't make it up. Gracious. You can't make it up with these people.
Wow, actually, that Missouri-Auburn game I was talking about is this week.
Yeah. Undefeated Duke and undefeated Kansas. The People's Game Day is also going to be on the slate this week. We mentioned that TFFL's chosen propaganda station of the day is Florida-Tennessee, even though Arkansas-Texas A&M is an objectively better and more likely more impactful game. I know they're going to say, look, it's two ranked teams, it's two name brands.
Wait, why is Tennessee ranked number 11 again? Oh, whatever. Michigan State was ranked number 11 last week. Who cares?
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. But Florida's quarterback actually has not thrown a touchdown this year and has three tackles because of the number of interceptions he's thrown. Hawaii, New Mexico State is certainly a game that's happening. That's one for you need to call the number on all those commercials you hear on the radio and TV all the time. You need to call the number they refer to and read off really quick at the end.
Well, when I'm looking for I'm looking at these ticket prices on ESPN. In massive inflation for the Iron Skillet Battle, we're talking well over 170 for those. But you know what other game has triple digit tickets? Indiana at Cincinnati, for some reason, but also James Madison at Appalachian State. Now that should absolutely be a barn burner for no other reason than that it involves Appalachian State, which has played nothing but extremely dramatic games through 3 weeks of the season.
It's true. They have been the most look-at-me program of the year in a way that I kind of dig.
Madison has a very high-powered offense. Their transition to FBS has been going swimmingly.
Yeah, up in the Sun Belt now. Right? Sun Belt? Yeah.
Yep, Fun Belt.
I didn't see anything else that interested me, but again, I'm going to be attending the MSU game in person, so I'm not likely to see much of anything. I may catch the latter half of late games, the earlier half of the noon games, depending on where we end up. But
UConn of the week goes to North Carolina State, playing UConn. Hey, UConn got to get paid, son.
Their basketball team makes money, doesn't it? Shouldn't it?
Yeah.
Hey.
You kind of got to get paid, son. And a suddenly resurgent Wyoming takes on BYU.
Talk about a win that's aging pretty well, actually.
Look, anytime you get hammered by Illinois, my immediate assumption is you're about to go 0-12 and fire your coach.
And hey, look, history has borne that out the last few years. But yeah, absolutely, Wyoming got themselves off the mat. It really did look like they might be terrible after that week zero, but have acquitted themselves pretty well, I have to say.
And the latest game of the week is going to be, of course, you have an Arizona State zombie game at 10:30, Herm Edwards against Utah, Stanford at Washington, and then Western Michigan at San Jose State. I don't know why, but that interests me.
Yeah, Western Michigan's non-con this year has been Michigan State, Pitt, and San Jose State, so they've played two teams that are the Spartans. I don't know what that's about. I think maybe Pat Narduzzi saw the movie Troy, or probably 300 more likely, and was like, this is the coolest thing ever. I gotta do everything I can to remember this movie and always be living the plot, kind of. That's the only thing I can think of. I don't know what else causes you to agree to go to San Jose State as a MAC team. They can't be getting paid for that. San Jose State's like in the same realm of athletic funds as they are. Why would you have...
Mountain West is a tier above...
Is it?
Yeah. Mountain West for sure is probably... the American's probably the biggest one, and then Mountain West... I'm sorry. The Big 12 is the biggest non-power conference, and then...
Wow.
Then's probably the American. Then Mountain West is the next one down.
We say that until, the Big 12 is the smaller fish that just distends its jaw and eats the bigger fish of the Pac-12.
Always a bigger fish.
Or a fish with a bigger mouth. Yeah.
Well, yes, of course, especially if it involved Texas at any time. The fish will definitely have a bigger mouth.
Bigger mouth for sure.
Your source for Big Ten Talk, it's Off Tackle Empire!